Welcome to Influential Visions. Here we interview futuristic leaders who share their deep industry knowledge and business experience with you, ensuring you have your finger on the pulse and your eyes wide open. Here is your host, Nathaniel Schuller.
Well, it is fantastic to be joined by Richard Godfrey. We are here to talk about smart cities, and Richard has masses of experience in this area. He has over 10 years' experience in digital efficiency and change. He's also won an award for the world's smartest city in 2015, and he was a member of the team that created that smart city for his work on Digital City Peterborough, in fact. And he's been in lots of publications. He's just finished writing his second book. So we're going to dig into the realities of smart cities versus the hype, because neither of us like hype. I'm not interested in any overhyped rubbish in this kind of area. So thank you for joining me again, Richard. I enjoyed speaking with you last time on like episode 50 or something. So yeah, it was a real pleasure. It was. And a lot has happened, but actually in terms of smart cities, do you think a lot has really changed? Because I think investment was kind of paused, as far as I can gather from people that I speak to in the sort of AI industry.
Yeah, definitely. I can't really see, even looking at publications, I get the Smart City newsletters and various other bits. We're still talking about kind of like connectivity, and we're still talking about throwing some sensors in and doing that. A few bits. There's nothing really that's kind of grabbing you to really garner any interest in what's going on. I'm going to say it's a marketing term. We all know it's a marketing term, but it could have been turned into something really good and really useful, and help drive the way that we live in our cities, driving healthcare change, everything like that. But yeah, I think it's just fallen into that marketing trap of being almost a pseudonym for throwing some tech in and see what happens.
Right. Because, you know, from what I gather, smart cities actually have a lot of benefits, right? So can you sort of list a few things off the top of your head that really are life-changing for people? Because I know we talked a little bit about this before we started this broadcast just now. And it's quite an exciting time, really, to be involved with smart cities in terms of, you know, reducing emissions, reducing traffic. What other things do you think are potentially going to be coming along in the next few years once they get back into the swing of things around this area?
Yeah, that's a humdinger of a question. Thanks. I think for me, It depends. The answer is it depends. I know this is kind of sitting on the fence, but the whole kind of reason behind a smart city is to basically fix problems within the city, to solve healthcare issues, to solve transport issues, excuse me, and everything else. And not every city is the same. Every city has different issues, and different parts of different cities have different issues. And the problem is, and in a way, it comes back to the kind of digital, people have looked at the tech, thrown it in and gone, let's almost hope that it gives us something. Whereas you should be looking at it and going, okay, in this particular city, what are the five key things that are happening? And that might be around healthcare, it might be health issues, it might be social issues, it could be a real lack of quality housing suffering from damp and mold and things like that. So you're then going, okay, so they're the problems here. What tech are we going to bring in to fix those that's going to enable people to live better lives, longer lives, more fulfilled lives, happier lives, healthier lives? And that's really where I think it's almost got itself back to the front, where they've gone, let's throw the tech in almost and let's hope it delivers something, against me looking at it and going, any project you do technically should be a smart project, because you should be fixing a problem within your city or within your town. And the difference really is smart city or smart technology originally kind of came from technology and sensors that could talk to each other without human input. So you can think about greenhouses that automatically open at certain temperatures when it's too hot, and you don't need human intervention in that. And we almost took that to be, okay, well, we'll put loads of tech in. There's no human intervention. It will do all these things. But until you have kind of people in the city, you don't really necessarily understand what any of those issues are going to be. And I have a real problem with these smart cities that are designed as smart cities from the ground up, because there might be a smart technology city, but they're not smart, because until people are in and people are using services and using transport and traveling around, you don't understand what problems you need to fix. And right. So mm-hmm. I'm just going to say, you can look at what's coming. There are going to be massive benefits to people's health, to the way they live, to transport, autonomous vehicles. All this stuff is going to be good, but you just have to shift the focus back to, is that a problem within our city? And if it is, then we should do something to fix it, rather than almost let's do some smart city projects and go by what's badged as smart city technology and just implement it and hope for an answer. And I'll keep going a little bit, but if you're talking about things like air quality sensors, lots of people are installing these air quality sensors. We're measuring that, but the reason you're doing that is so you can improve air quality. So you need to know how to improve air quality. And the reason you're improving air quality is because you must assume, therefore, that it's going to be healthier for people to live in air that's less polluted. But do you actually understand how that's going to help them, or how long it's going to help them live for, or how many less people are going to have asthma, how many less people are going to be taken into hospital with breathing difficulties? And unfortunately, we're still in that kind of, let's fund a project for 2-3 years and see where we get to. But if you're talking air quality, you're talking about the next 20 years of someone's health. It's not a 3-year project. It's a really long-term vision that says we need to improve or reduce the number of people that are suffering from breathing difficulties or asthma or respiratory illnesses. But we have to look at a big picture, and that's where I think smart cities need to be longer term focusing. And that's where I think you'll get more kind of bang for your buck of investment in these tools, because nothing you're really looking at is a short term fix.
Right. So would I be right in saying that there are going to be certain preventative technologies that will be ubiquitous and used across all smart cities, and then over and above that, then there will be extra I would like kind of shopping list items that then people are going to put in that are more specific and tailored? So there's kind of like a base level of bits and pieces of technologies that, you know, for example, like the traffic monitoring, the you know, that sort of thing. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think in general you can say, okay, in most cities there's going to be issues with traffic. We know that. We've all seen the news, we've seen reports, you've seen probably pictures of places like Shanghai where there's 10-lane motorways and it's stacked with cars and no one's moving. We know that's problems. I live near Cambridge. We don't have 10-lane motorways. We have single lane, and it's just as polluted and just as difficult to get around. So transport, traffic, you have the same issue. It's just probably different scales of number of cars coming through, amount of pollution that it's creating, and then obviously the knock-on effects of that. Because again, you might look at Cambridge and say, okay, we do have traffic issues and it does release emissions, but actually Cambridge as a city is also quite green. It's got quite a lot of parks, open spaces, trees. I've not been to Shanghai, but let's assume Shanghai is a lot more skyscrapers, tall buildings that can hold the pollutants in more, and things like that. So there are similarities, but then there's also still going to be differences as well that you then have to factor in to that. So again, Cambridge, I mean, I couldn't say for certain, but the tallest building can't be more than 10 floors in Cambridge. There's nothing really that stands much higher than that.
Isn't so, the cathedral is probably like the tallest building in the city, right?
You know what I mean? So that can, but around that, air can escape and it can go upwards. Whereas if you're in the middle of London and you're around kind of like the Gherkin or the walkie-talkie tower, it's tall buildings that are quite narrow, so they're going to trap it. So the solution you need to fix air quality there might be different to here. And again, that might be different to the middle of Birmingham, the middle of Liverpool. So similarities, but differences, yeah.
Right. So in terms of other kind of things, are we talking about, you know, people flow, road quality, what kind of things can we be expecting in the next 5 years, 10 years from analysis of data that's going to be gathered from all of these sensors and cameras, do you think?
Yeah, interesting. I think transport, I think air quality is massive. I think that is huge. I think anything climate related is huge, and that could be all the way down to kind of like river levels, where runoff goes to, or we keep talking about how many new houses we need to build in this country, but every time you lay concrete down, that's a different runoff for water. So are we monitoring water levels, where that goes? Does that increase flooding risks in other places? So for me, I think a lot of the focus is going to be on that kind of climate change area, what we can do about it. And although I kind of knock some of the projects and say, okay, they do need to be 20 odd years, you also do need the data. So actually putting the sensors in now, but saying we're going to just leave them running for 10 years so that we've got enough data, because we've got four seasons in the UK, it changes constantly. So you need to have enough data to look at everything. And cities, COVID, massive effects on cities. People are traveling less, there's less people going into them, less footfall going through them. What impact does that have on the environment, on the shopping, on commerce, on businesses? How are people thinking about cities now? Is it that actually we all stay at home and we're much quieter, we don't need as much even food brought in from afar? Can we do much more local? I think Oxford's talking about the 15-minute city at the moment, about being able to basically produce everything you need to within 15 minutes of where you live, and being able to travel everywhere within 15 minutes. So I think the focus has to almost come off a little bit around smart and smart technology and all of that, and just focus on what are the biggest issues in the world today. Okay, cost of living is massive. We need to look at how we can improve that. And the climate's going to be massive as well. And how do we look at that? And like you say, it might be roads, because it might be that we need to start thinking electric vehicles. Therefore, we need self-charging roads and we need solar panels on roads. We need more charging stations. I think in Sweden, they're trialing roads that actually generate power as you go over them. Sounds a little bit like your old scale electric set that was powered by the little metal track that ran down the middle of it. But there are things that are going to happen and change because of how we live our lives, how things have changed, how we use cities, how we use towns and everything like that. And healthcare, I think, is still going to be huge. We know that kind of like the number of nurses and doctors is going down. We're struggling to recruit into things like that. So the more you can do to improve people's lives and keep them living at home, in their own homes, healthier, happier, then you're talking about having sensors for trip monitors to make sure people haven't fallen, movement sensors to make sure they've managed to get out of bed in the morning. You can have sensors on taps and things to make sure water's being turned on and being used, and all little things like that. And that for me is what smart should be about, because it's about improving the health and well-being and lives of people who live in cities.
Right. But also, I mean, there are sort of certain preventative technologies that can be used. So for example, you know, image recognition software has been used for decades. Much of us like to ignore the fact that that's been used in our airports to scan for terrorists for decades, I would say, without people actually realizing. So, I mean, I think there are certain aspects for that. I mean, London has massive problems with stabbings, certain other and weapons and certain other cities within the UK. I think certainly being able to detect people who are carrying weapons would be very, very useful. I think we also walk into the ethical side of things once we're actually looking into these technologies, because, you know, I mean, there was a tweet the other day about a Chinese woman who, I forget what she was going. Oh, that was it. There was a robot that she didn't like. And she basically just started like smashing this robot, right? I forget what the reason was behind it, but it's like implementing all of these things. They need to be implemented in a very, very careful, measured way, right? But actually, it has the potential to transform the entire world around us, and actually stop a lot of crime. Reduce the environmental impacts from leaving lights on, for example, from, you know, potentially having escalators that are working when nobody is. I mean, we've all seen smart escalators, right? But does the London Underground have them? We've also got people who kill themselves on train tracks, right? So it's like, well, you know, with all of this technology, why have we still got people that are able to jump on a train track and kill themselves? Why is that actually even possible now? Surely that is something that, you know, that and preventing insurance claims from all sorts of things, from car accidents through to holes in the road to all sorts of these things. We have so much potential to save insurance companies and save the government and the train companies, millions and millions, billions probably, right? I mean, we've had all of this since in the UK, since Margaret Thatcher sold off all the train rights and all of this, and they privatized the trains. The price of a train ticket has gone absolutely through the roof. And now I've heard something in the press about actually the train companies are like, well, we haven't really got much money to invest in infrastructure. So now we're actually going to have to continue to increase the prices, but actually the service is going to get worse. And I heard this the other day and I was like, are you kidding me? Like, is this for real? Yeah. So I don't know, man. I'm kind of excited about the future of this. But also, I'm scared that a lot of money is going to be wasted, like you are, but from badly implemented projects. And this is what you know. You're all about the project deliverables, aren't you? And the reasons to deliver these things.
Absolutely. And to take some of the examples, you can go back to, okay, there's a lot of stabbings in London, but actually the root cause isn't because we don't have CCTV or image recognition. There's a different root cause to what's causing that. And that starts probably with kids at primary school and doing projects with them at that age to take them on a path that leads them away from crime in the future. And there's hundreds of people in London that you've probably heard of that run now charities and that have been in gangs or committed crime as kids. They're now a bit older. They're looking back and they're saying, actually, I know what mistakes I made. I'm going to help these kids through that journey. That to me is as good a smart city project as putting a camera up or putting facial recognition up.
Right.
And suicides and things. Yeah, you can have something that says, okay, I've noticed someone stood on a platform and they're acting oddly, and we've got some AI recognition that can pick up kind of emotions or how someone's moving or what they're doing. That stops that, but actually that person actually has probably been let down before that through not having the right access to the right medical care and things like that. And that's where I think technology can play parts. So we're already looking at kind of online therapists now. You can call them up almost as a Zoom call or a web chat and have a conversation with someone that maybe 5 years ago, it might have taken you 6 years to navigate through a very complicated NHS service to get to that point. So using tools, technology, and delivering services and things like that in a different way, that's where I get kind of excited about where we can go with some of this technology as well, because I do think it's all about the city, the citizens that live in the city, and improving their lives and their health. And even the point you make about kind of potholes and insurance claims and all of that, the other biggest issue you've got in smart cities is who's funding it. So if pothole claims are causing you £10 million a year of cost, then isn't it better to invest £5 million in fixing the potholes, regardless of whether you're the council, the insurance company, the government, or whoever? You need to be smarter in how you're thinking about this, come together and say, actually, if we all work together, fix the roads, make sure they're more drivable, make sure the signs are better, make sure the white lines are all painted on properly and all of that, then you might take away some of that other impact further down the line. But it's almost like, well, we'll just wait for the government to fix that. They can fix the potholes. We know they haven't got money. They know they don't have resources. Local government is stretched as far as it can be stretched. And so a lot of the work just needs to think differently about how we deliver some of these things as well. So I'm going to use the kind of blockbuster Netflix analogy, but actually all you're doing is taking a model that we've worked with for years and years, is Blockbuster, where inefficient, we all drove to the shop, we all picked the video up. We're almost in a world where we all look at that and go, oh, that's the government. But actually the impact of that is the government, it's the NHS, it's insurance companies, it's car companies, it's everything else. So doesn't that funding model look better than just sitting waiting, hoping the government's going to fill the holes in? And I think that's a really interesting debate that needs to be had.
Wow. So really it's about working out what efficiencies can be created and what the best way is to implement those, versus basically throwing in some technology and saying, well, this is the solution, before you've even worked out what the problem is, right? Because there's got to be a business case, hasn't there? For like all of these things, there must be a business case. Otherwise, we're in a situation, aren't we, at the end of the day?
Yeah, absolutely. And I remember even back, I shouldn't say this, but back at Peterborough, I wanted to put air quality sensors in, and I was actually stopped from doing it. And when I asked why, it was because the answer was, well, we don't know what to do if it's bad. And we probably haven't got the funding to fix it if it's bad. So if I go and put all these air sensors around the city and we have a nice open data website that people can access it, and actually it says that in this particular area, you've got a real issue. As a council, we didn't have a bucket of money to go, well, actually, we can really go and fix this problem. It's almost like we've highlighted the issue and then gone, let's hope almost there's a third party that's looking at this, that have a solution that will come to us and tell us how to fix it, because we don't know. And the government obviously don't know the answer to all these questions. Local councils don't know the answers to all these questions. So it is about how do you bring all the different kind of companies and actors within the environment together to say, look, we need a proper joined up approach to how we deliver this kind of across the city, rather than each individual company trying to take a small portion of it, because ultimately that's not going to deliver any change.
So really it needs to be a much more joined up approach in terms of the data that is collected, where that data goes, how it is used by the government, by the companies. So it's really a public and private sector kind of operation in order to maximize how this works, right? Like it could be Amazon could be the perfect company to partner with in thinking about this, in actually not delivering it perhaps, because that would maybe be a step too far, but actually in terms of optimization of their fleets. Don't you think they've probably already thought about this in terms of, certainly in terms of, you know, putting in the the boxes in the supermarkets or the garages where you go pick up your items, yeah. right? Like, so they've already crunched a lot of data. So what do you think about kind of that sort of approach?
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the awards that we did win was Amazon City on a Cloud back in 2016. And that was for an approach where we were putting weather sensors into schools. And although there was an element of we wanted to understand the weather patterns, we also wanted to teach the kids in the schools about weather. And also we used to almost call it, what do we call it, analysis by stealth or something like that, because actually we wanted them to compare their school to a school in another part of Peterborough and see if they had different rainfall levels, different pollutant levels and everything else. So we were trying to get kids interested in the environment and the effects of it using sensors. And obviously that the back all of that was all onto an Amazon platform and open. But they want to be commercial, they want to be efficient, they want to deliver a service as efficient as possible. And again, liking it to Netflix, Blockbuster was so inefficient as a process. The fact you had to get in your car, drive somewhere, they only used to have a limited amount of DVDs of the film you wanted to watch. So if you got there late, it wasn't even in stock. Then you had to take it back immediately the following morning at 9 o'clock in the morning to make sure you didn't get a fee, versus I sit in my chair, I click a button and the film comes to me. So you can immediately see you're talking efficiency with digital and how it's delivered and how those tools come to you. Amazon, as you said, hugely smart company. They've got the actual shop and the retail side, but then you've got Amazon Web Services that do all of the machine learning, the data crunching and that side of things. Everything they do and all the tools they release that as part of Amazon Web Services, they've built them because they wanted to use them all internally themselves first. So they were doing machine learning years ago and learning what you liked, what I like, so they could send us relevant adverts. So you do need to apply some of that learning into a city environment and say, actually, okay, for someone to get to hospital, what's the most efficient way of them doing that? What do we deliver? How do we do it now? And what is the most efficient way? And that might be the most efficient way as we go to them. The most efficient way might be that we have a fleet of driverless vehicles that pick people up and take them to hospital so that we're not bothering ambulances. So if it's a non-emergency procedure, but you need to get there, driverless car comes, picks you up, takes you to hospital, drops you off. There's a great solution. But until you know that people getting to hospital is a problem, you haven't really got anything to fix. So I think there's an element of we do need to get some of the sensors in now. We need to start looking at where we might hypothesize we believe there's an issue with this. Get the sensors in, spend time just collecting data. And then once you've got the data, you can go, okay, either we have either proved the hypothesis or we've disproved it. And if we've proved it, we've therefore got a problem that we need to fix. And in fixing the problem, that involves a wide range of players coming together to provide solutions for that. So right. Something like an Uber ambulance service in autonomous vehicles probably isn't too far away from something that will happen in the future.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask you. How far away do you think we are from autonomous vehicles in the UK? I mean, we're and Europe as well.
Probably not far. I've been to San Francisco recently, and you see a lot of them driving around. They're everywhere, autonomous vehicles, almost to the point where the first one you see, you get quite excited by it. And after you've walked down the street for 10 minutes, you're just going, oh, there's another one.
I haven't been there since 2019. So for me, you know, I'm in Croatia here. I've probably seen maybe five Teslas in the past 2.5 years, you know?
Yeah, it was a different level of... the first one I saw, I actually just thought it was one of the Google Street View cars going by. So I waved at it to make sure that I was on a map of San Francisco in the future. And then obviously when you've seen two or three of them, it suddenly dawned on me exactly what it was. And I was like, wow, these are everywhere. And even, you know, Lombard Street, the really windy one, I walked down that, and there was about five or six that came down. So they're all obviously practicing, learning how to maneuver around these. So within the next decade, I think we'll be in a position where there are just, I think they'll be on the road within kind of like the next 3 to 5 years. But within the next decade, I think we'll see more and more. But again, you can look at it and go, okay, well, what do we mean by autonomous vehicles? Like, is that we can just pick someone up and drop them off at a hospital, so we're becoming a bit more of a taxi service? Is it that we need autonomous kind of buses or transport or trams? Is London Underground going to go autonomous as opposed to needing drivers? And so there's lots of different angles you can look at it, and again, find what kind of affects you where you live. Cambridge is hugely busy, but the centre of it is all bicycles. So actually, do you need autonomous vehicles to drive you to kind of like the park and ride area of Cambridge, sorry, and then you cycle in from there? So yeah, I can see uses for them all over the place. A lot of it would just kind of come down to, will people actually use the technology? And I think in somewhere like San Francisco, where they're so used to tech companies and innovation and new things, jumping in a driverless Uber is probably scary the first time, but after two or three times and seeing them on the road every day, you now almost expect it. And you're probably shocked when a car turns up with a driver in it. But over here, if I suddenly said to my mum, for example, here's a car, it's going to take you to the local hospital, and there's no driver, there's a good chance you might not get in it. So yeah, there's a lot of public will, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, what is interesting is that you mentioned your mom. I mean, and you mentioned quality of life, you mentioned healthcare, and you mentioned the air quality. And it's like, it's actually quite amazing, because the aging population is going to literally change so dramatically in the next 10 years. We're you know, in 10 years, I'm going to be like 56, right, in 10 years, okay? And a lot of people who are 56 are going to be 66, right? And demographic-wise, certainly in the UK, we've got a massively aging population, right? So then it's going to be, well, how do we change the way that these smart cities cater to these older generation? And actually, it will probably be very useful by then, because actually we'll be able to have preventative technologies that actually save them from accidents, that maybe you know, basically just streamline everything to improve people's quality of life, right? So what do you think the focus should be on, like, with a smart city? Like, what's the purpose of it? Like, why is it even thought about? I mean, I kind of know a bit, but, you know.
Yeah. I mean, the initial concept of smart city, let's be honest, is just a marketing term. That's the same with digital transformation. They needed something to almost bundle everything under. But I think if you break it down to its most simplest point, you're genuinely trying to provide better lives, better living for the residents of the city. So the actual word city derives from citizen. So it's all about the citizens. So what are you doing to make their lives better, simpler, more efficient, last longer, live longer, but live longer, healthier kind of lives? So I just think you really have to go into, what are the problems that affect us in our cities where we live? Because you can kind of group them, but you can't at the same time. So what works in Dubai, for example, with police robots going around the shopping malls, try that somewhere. I'm not going to name any cities, but there's probably some cities we can all think of where, if that was the case, those robots would go missing within the first 15 minutes. And they'd be either thrown out, hoiked, or someone would be reprogramming it at home to do something else. And likewise in Cambridge, they've got the small delivery robots that bring you your takeaway or your shopping, that's got a code on. And you can imagine, again, Cambridge is quite high tech. There's a lot of people who work in that industry who live here. in my work here, but in other areas, again, they might just get taken off the roads, broken, smashed up, or anything else. So you have to put some sense around it that says we can change the way we live, but every city has its own demographic, it has its own people, it has its own way of living. Some cities are much more walkable, some are 100% drivable, some have got really good public transport, some don't. And so you can't really just compare the two. There's no tube in Cambridge. There's no tube pretty much outside of London. So London's own kind of smart city issues, if we're talking about real air quality and what they need to fix, half of it's probably from the underground, because I've come off it many times, blown my nose, and what comes out is black, because it is so polluted down there. But that's not going to be an issue in Liverpool. Liverpool are going to have a completely different issue that they need to fix. So just focus on the actual citizens that live in your city. Who are they? How do they live their lives? What issues do we have? What's preventing them from living long, healthy, happy lives? And what can we therefore do or implement to fix it? And it might be that we just don't have enough data and we need to spend 5 years collecting the data. And then when we start talking about smart cities, we're doing it from a position of knowledge and interpretation of key data and information. And also by then, if you've got that data, then we're going to have the tools, we're going to have the AI, we're going to have the machine learning, we're going to have the automations to be able to extract information from that to say, we think the solutions for this city are this, based on lots of different information. And I love talking about Groningen, I can never pronounce it, Groningen in Holland, who, obviously Holland, massive cycling nation. They had an issue that when it rained, people didn't cycle to work. And you might all look at that and go, well, clearly, because it's raining, no one cycled to work. They all got in their cars and they did something else. But when they actually got out and spoke to cyclists about why they didn't cycle in the rain, it wasn't actually because it was necessarily just because it was raining. It was the amount of time they were having to stop at red lights and just kind of almost stand stationary whilst getting rained on. While they were moving, they were fine. So they came up with a simple solution to put a sensor that identified when a bike was coming along a bike path. It stopped the traffic from moving, so the cycle could carry on continuously without stopping. And funny enough, more people stayed on their bikes. But if you hadn't asked anyone, your natural assumption might have just been, well, it was raining, so of course they didn't want a bike. So what we're going to do is provide them with better coats or better waterproof trousers, rather than coming up with a solution that worked for them. So understanding who your residents are, who your citizens are, and getting out and finding from them what issues are hampering their lives, that's where I think you'll find the solutions. And I think kind of take up of things like autonomous vehicles and other software that we talk about now, facial recognition, most people would be put off by that and say, well, that's Big Brother, they're spying on us. But if you said it's facial recognition because you have told us about this problem, and the only way we can solve that problem is to understand who you are, that's a completely different conversation, at which point they might say, yes, we're happy with that. So for me, it's all about how we kind of spin the story of what we're doing.
Right. But it's not just facial recognition, is it? It's image recognition, because there's so much potential. I mean, we've seen the developments the past 10 years around image recognition. It's insane. Like when you look at how you can sort your photos, just as an example, and that's not even an industrial, that's available to everyone's smartphone, right? Like you can sort your photos based upon certain terms that you type in, and they've got way better, right? And now we're at a point where actually we can analyze a lot of things very, very quickly. So then we can use that data in order to prevent accidents, in order to, look at maintenance issues within buildings. There are so many different applications for these things that I think taking the time to understand which ones are important in the actual localities is definitely important. But from the thinking I've been doing around it, like there is a sort of not just like a one brush for everyone, but there are certain items that probably would pay dividends in the short term, like within a year or two. I mean, they'd certainly bring in some sort of not a return on investment immediately, but after a few years, they would bring in return on investment much faster than some of the other kind of nice to have kind of items, right? You know?
Yeah, and I've implemented some of the sensors in homes and things like that already for people that we saw return on investments within weeks of implementing stuff, even if it was one story was just a sensor on someone's medicine cabinet to make sure they'd opened it and taken the tablets the day. And that particularly on the day they got ill, someone very quickly checked the data and said, "You haven't opened your medicine cabinet. We know immediately what's wrong with you." So there's huge amounts of small tech fixes that you can put in very quickly. You throw around things like bin lorries and that. There's no reason why. You think about a self-driving car. If you've ever seen one of these go around San Francisco on the streets, it's got sensors and monitors all over the car. If you added those onto bin lorries, for example, you could immediately monitor all of your streets where you are, because every street you go up and down that's got a house on, you can monitor the tarmac level, the number of potholes, the issues, things in the road, all sorts. And we're not necessarily thinking about using everyday items to collect that data to then tell us what the problems are. And using your example on image recognition, the obvious one in the UK, there used to be a Microsoft advert about snow leopards. And clearly, without being too simplistic, you've put some pictures in it and gone, that's a snow leopard, that's not, that's a snow leopard, that's not, until it's learned exactly what a snow leopard is. So now when a snow leopard triggers a camera, they know exactly, there's a snow leopard, this is its location. And so you're thinking about, how do we then use that kind of technology in our cities? How do we understand what's going on? And how do we use these tools? And I think the problem is that there's not enough kind of people in, let's call them senior roles within local authorities, within councils, within government, that get it, that understand that even if you can't fix things, collecting the data now and starting will help you drive all of that. Because if you didn't have a picture of a snow leopard to tell the computer what a snow leopard was, it can't learn anything. So you have to be out collecting. So little things like opening medicine cabinets, an alert going off to tell you that it's happened. Right, we'll start collecting that data. Are people remembering to take their pills every day? Is that a problem? And you've probably seen those little pill kits that have a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday on, and you put your pills in. That's almost like the first version of that. If you then make that with a sensor in it that knows that the cap has been flipped on the right day, you can start to take action. Your next step is then that if one of them doesn't open, it sends a message to your phone saying you haven't taken your tablet today, make sure you do. If that then hasn't been responded to within 5 minutes, that message might go to your son or daughter to say, by the way, your dad's sensor hasn't gone off for his medicine today. Do you want to check in on him?
Right.
And so you can start to build all these pictures up. And as much as I've put a bit of a downer on some of the smart city stuff, you can see that if you look at it properly from almost what is preventing and what's happening and everything else, you can sit there and go, wow, the next 10 years is going to be crazy with what we can do. I mean, the explosion of ChatGPT in a couple of weeks, from where that went from no one had heard of it to now there's experts on LinkedIn telling you how to use it.
quick.
Yeah. But the movement that will cause and actually the interest that brings into, well, actually, what is tech and what is AI and what is that? I'd like to see almost like an explosion following that going, wow, this has so many implications for the rest of the world that we can now do stuff with. Whereas almost probably 2 years ago, the explosion was NFTs, wasn't it? For 3 months, NFTs were the world. everyone went crazy, but actually there wasn't a massive implication of that wider than you're going to make some money by buying and selling some images. But here we're now talking about people genuinely interested in AI data, how it works, how machine learning works, how language models work, and all of that stuff. And hopefully, if we've now got a generation coming through as well that are more interested in the environment and social, we see that people want to work in companies that are trying to achieve something through the company, not just making money, but actually trying to make the world a better place. Then you've got such a nice kind of coming together of technology with people with more of a social conscience with the youth coming through, that this is where I think the changes are going to be monumental and make a real difference to people's lives. But everything for me starts with find out what the problems are and then go forward from there.
Right. So, yeah, I mean, really, we're talking about moving beyond the Luddites who are in many cases uneducated in these kind of areas. That's really what we're talking about. People without an open mind, people who are scared of spending money. And I understand why they are, because their jobs are on the line at the end of the day. However, if they find someone who knows about the topic, they know how to implement, they build technology systems, et cetera, et cetera, then it is possible that they can actually go on to deliver successful implementations, right? So I want to thank you very much for your time. I could literally talk about this for hours and hours, because it fascinates me, the whole innovation and disruptive nature of what's happening right now. I share your half glass full attitude. I also agree with you in terms of the way that you kind of look at it, because the hype just has to, we've got to stop the hype. There isn't some kind of mad AI that's taking over the world. And this is what people need to understand from my conversation with Monique Morrow, which was a couple of weeks back. It's just data. Everything is about data, right? It's data in and it's analysis of that data at the end of the day. And that's really the core of what we're sort of talking about. So like I say, I want to thank you very, very much for your time. I'm gonna basically drop a link wherever you're watching this. There will be a link to Richard. And please do comment, follow the show wherever you're listening. And thank you so much. Greatly appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. And as I said in my book, Nat, there's not 100 of people stood at the side of the road with a sickle waiting to cut the crops. We adapted to combine harvesters and things like that. People moved on. They got jobs looking after the combines, looking after the horses. The exact same thing will happen with AI. It's not going to take everyone's jobs. We're just going to learn to live with it, work with it, and then hopefully explore the many, many benefits that will come off the back of it.
Absolutely. Thanks, everyone.
Cheers. Thank you.
Thanks very much for listening to Influential Visions. Please make sure you share this episode with your friends and business connections. And don't forget to drop us a review wherever you listen. Thanks. Thanks very much for listening to Influential Visions. Please make sure you share this episode with your friends and business connections.